Hello, you're tuned in to episode number 41 of the Avery Ventures podcast. On this episode, we have Justin Webb from the Foundation of Wildlife Management. They are an organization that reimbursed a hunter for killing wolves. I know wolves are a touchy subject. Anytime you bring them up, both sides of the debate get hackled up. So I want to put this out there in the beginning. Me nor Justin are anti-wolf. We both just agree they need to be managed extremely hard. I've hunted in Idaho since I was legally able to and followed people around long before I was actually legal. If you don't think the wolves have had an effect on our populations of elk and deer and moose, you're kidding yourself. And it's kind of discouraging to me that I've listened to a few podcasts from our hunting celebrities and they kind of tiptoe around the whole wolf debate. Wolves are having an impact, especially in the state of Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming. And if you have elk in your state, you have deer in your state, and you surround those three states, guess what? The wolf's coming. So I really hope you listen to this podcast all the way through, and I really hope you choose to get involved with what Justin's got going on. Justin, welcome to the show. Can you please go through how you started this organization?
People here locally who are avid elk hunters, basically, just common folks, loggers and plumbers and carpenters and different things. And we were seeing a drastic impact on our ungulate populations, our elk specifically. And then we really started taking notice to our moose populations dwindling. And we wanted to do something to help. And so when we got wolf trapping and hunting season opened up, we were all really excited about it. We thought we were going to go out and we were going to harvest wolves and we were going to make a difference. We were going to save elk and moose and deer. And what happened was we all went out and we spent a ton of money and we put a ton of hours into it and we didn't kill any wolves at all. And we couldn't understand. I mean, we didn't realize what we were getting into. We didn't know it was going to be that difficult. And so, some of the founders of the organization actually took the initiative to get a group of people together and called up a local trapper who traps bobcat and marten for a living. That's how he pays his bills in the wintertime. And so he asked that gentleman to come have lunch with them. And I believe they bought him lunch and they sat down with him and said, "We need you to teach us how to trap wolves." And the guy looked at him and said, I don't trap wolves." And they were all kind of puzzled and shocked. And they said, "Well, do you hunt elk?" And he said, "Well, yeah, of course I do." He said, "Well, how, I mean, you know how to get this done and we don't, and you're telling us you're not going to trap wolves." And he said, "You don't get it." He said, I feed my family. I pay my bills by trapping." He said, "Trapping wolves is going to cost you money." And they all kind of looked around at each other, dumbfounded. And one of them said, "Well, I just spent over $2,000 and wasted my entire season. And I didn't remove any wolves. I should have just given you the money and had you go kill some wolves to try to save our elk." And they all kind of laughed about it. And one of them, I think, got serious. And he said, "Well, what would it take? How much would it cost for me to pay you to stop trapping bobcats or whatever you're doing and go catch wolves?" And through that conversation, they come to the amount of $500. For $500, he said it would be worth his time to at least try. He could run some wolf sets and stuff while he was trapping bobcats. And from that, the idea just kind of got tossed around in the group. And eventually, they hired a lawyer to put together the paperwork and everything to get our 501c3 status all established. And the idea was to try to raise enough money to get the people who knew how to harvest wolves in the woods to do so, because our wolf population was expanding so fast and having such a negative impact on our moose and our elk that we were all in shock. You know, we'd go and snowmobile up Lightning Creek over here out of Clark Fork, and in a day's snowmobile ride, you'd find a half a dozen moose that had the hamstrings all chewed off of them, laying in the ditch. And they, it's infuriating. And
yeah,
the sportsmen were just angry. And so from that, you know, the first couple of years, we were real quiet about it, real concerned with death threats and different things, because people don't understand what a wolf today is. The only thing that people know about wolves is what National Geographic taught us a wolf would be. And they portrayed all of these human characteristics onto wolves that's 100% false. Mm-hmm. And so still today, I have different conversations with people from the city and they still try to inform me, quote unquote, that a wolf is a family unit, and right, that only the alpha male and female breed, and they only kill the sick and the weak, and they, you know, only have as many pups as what the area and habitat around them can sustain. And we now know all of that is false. And there's so many of those people that come at me with a very angry temperament, and I don't blame them, because at one point I believed all that stuff. I watched National Geographic growing up. Even as a trapper, there was a time a few years ago when I was trapping in a pack of wolves, and I found where the male and female had brought a litter down the road. And then I'm tracking them down the road, and there's four or five pups that are all one size, and then obviously two big adult dogs. And pretty soon here comes a set of tracks out of the low bank, and there's a big track, and there's a whole bunch of little pup tracks with that. So there's two litters of pups walking down the same road, and I just was puzzled by that. And so I finally called up the predator biologist, and I said, what's going on? And he kind of giggled at me a little bit. And he said, well, Justin, they're dogs. When they come into heat, they get bred. That's how it works. And all of a sudden a light bulb went off in my head, and I said, oh my gosh, you know what? I'm no different than everybody else. I mean, I've been indoctrinated to believe that a wolf is one thing when in reality it's not. It's something completely different. And so anyhow, I mean, not to get off on a huge tangent, but so the organization, I think the first year that we reimbursed wolves was in 2012, and I think we funded 16 wolves that year. And then it's just, it's grown and expanded since then. I think we went from 16 to 48 the following year, from 48 to, I don't remember what the year was after that. 2 years ago, I think we funded 98 wolves. And
wow.
Today, we've removed more than 390 wolves from Idaho.
So that was in 2012? That's when you guys, that was your first year?
Our first year of actually reimbursing for wolf harvest.
So we better stop and start with the nuts and bolts of what the Foundation for Wildlife Management does.
Okay.
How it takes its money, how it reimburses its money. Can you go through that process? I think that's kind of a confusing process, and how you're set up as a dot org. How you're just, you know, how you're trying to grow it, just like the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation or the, you know, Wild Turkey Foundation or the Mule Deer Foundation, and where you're trying to go, and how it helps the wildlife, and how it's funded. Can you kind of go through the nuts and bolts of how that works out?
Sure, absolutely. Well, when people ask me what it is that we do, I use the same statement. We bring the people who want wolves managed together with the guys that have the ways and means of getting the job done. And a lot of people don't realize the cost that's involved with managing wolves. And that's a huge part of, it's the entire reason for the program. You know, I can tell you that from my own personal experience, I've removed 15 wolves from the state of Idaho. For every one of those wolves, I've invested 280 hours and $1,600 just in fuel.
For one. One wolf.
Yeah. And I've repeated that process 15 times. So when people ask what we do, we're trying to make it possible to manage wolf populations. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We've tried to mimic the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation to the best of our ability. They're one of the largest wildlife nonprofits in the world, and obviously they're doing something right. So we've really tried to use their the way that they're set up, as a mold per se to mimic. It's all based off of membership fees. So we reimburse hunters and trappers up to $1,000 for every wolf that they harvest. The reimbursement amounts fluctuate based on the time of year and also the region that you're hunting or trapping in. Hunted wolves during the prime hunting season in the fall, we reimburse $250 per wolf. And the reason that reimbursement is so much lower is because a person who's out hunting deer or elk has much less invested than, say, a guy that's running a trap line in January, snowmobiling in 30 miles to be able to trap wolves. Right. And we want to make the best use of our members' dollars. It's all based on membership funding and fundraising banquets. We reimburse $500 per wolf for shot wolves from December 1st through March 31st statewide. We reimburse $500 for any legally trapped wolf in the state of Idaho. And then we have increased reimbursement zones. So per se, this past year, units 1, 4, and 4A, we reimbursed $750 per wolf in those zones. And we reimbursed $1,000 per wolf in the low-low zones, units 10 and 12. The proposal that's been made for this upcoming season is to reimburse $750 per wolf in the entire Panhandle region. and $1,000 per wolf, not only in units 10 and 12, but also in a large number of the backcountry wilderness areas where access to be able to remove wolves from those areas is going to take basically being flown in and camping out. A lot of that backcountry ground has not been pressured for wolf management anyhow. Or wolf management has not been implemented, I should say. So a lot of people look at this and they think that people are just out to make money. And something that it's really important to explain is wolf populations in Idaho and how that works. So prior to having started managing our wolves in Idaho, they were reproducing at 40% annually. So wow. If you have, say, 1,000 wolves, that next spring's pupping, you'd have an additional 400 wolves. And a lot of people don't understand that. They think that somehow we're wiping out the wolves with what we're doing. From my perspective, we've never once harvested the number of wolves born in Idaho in any given season, not one time.
What was the carrying capacity for Idaho when the goals were initially set, and what do you think it's at now?
Well, I can tell you that, so for them to become delisted, I believe National Wildlife Service stated that we needed to manage for 100 wolves and 10 breeding pairs. Idaho Fish and Game upped that, and they said that they would manage for 15 breeding pairs and 150 total wolves for the state. I think that we met that. We had documentation to meet that back in 2002, I believe it was, and then it took an extensive period of time to get them delisted after they met those goals. To date, I shouldn't go there yet, I suppose. 2 years ago, our state predator biologist had estimated, I believe it was 786 wolves that he had documentation for in the state. One of the things that I think that it's really important to recognize, though, is what it takes for them to claim a set number of wolves. So the predator biologist claims a set number of wolves. Let's just say use 500 for a number. Well, the people who believe that we should not be managing wolves will come to them and say, you have to prove it. You can't claim it unless you can prove 500 wolves. So for them to prove that, they have to actually go out and either dart from helicopters or trap wolves, put collars on them, track them to their den, try to estimate the pack size based on litter numbers and other varying factors. And so what's happened is for the Fish and Game Department to be able to document a set number of wolves, it's extremely difficult and extremely expensive. Exactly. Every time that they claim a set number of wolves, they're told that they're not allowed to do that unless they have documentation to prove it. So, the process, we were talking about costs there, the process of documenting wolves is extremely expensive. I can tell you that for removing wolves, Idaho in the past, outside of sportsmen, has hired the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Wildlife Services to do that for us, for the state. And in 2016, their average cost per wolf removed was $9,005.
I think people need to hear you say that again. This is costing the taxpayers how much per wolf for the government to take them out?
In 2016, the average was $9,005 for every wolf that they removed. And granted, that's not, I don't state that to in any way insinuate that they're not good at doing what they do. I'm sharing that because it's really important to understand what it takes to manage wolf populations. They're extremely smart. They multiply extremely rapidly. The management of wolves alone is so misunderstood. We can manage bear and lion populations really easily through hunting. Bears and lions only have one or two cubs every other year. With wolves, you're looking at a critter that hunts in a pack 365 days a year. More than one female in each pack can be bred. And their average litter size, I believe, is 7 wolf pups per litter.
That's just average.
That's just average. So it's just a completely different animal trying to keep up with their numbers. I mean, it's sad to say this or to even think about it, but there's a reason that they had to poison them the first time to get control of their numbers. They gave up on trying to manage their numbers. They couldn't keep up with them. And back then, the state and the government had bounties, like full-blown bounties, not a reimbursement like our program, but a full-blown bounty, and they couldn't keep up with them. They could not keep their numbers in check enough to allow other wildlife species to flourish.
Right. So the one thing I want to kind of highlight there is these wolves are getting managed either way. They're getting managed by the sportsmen, which is pretty much nothing negligent on the taxpayer, or they're getting managed by the state federal government level, which you say is, which you actually say it's $9,000 average per wolf.
In 2016, it was. And they've increased.
How much killed, you know?
I don't want to try to quote that number. I know that since we started, it was in the mid-400s total of the number of wolves that they've removed, and we've removed almost 400 through our program. 390 is where we're at right now. So it's real. Sportsmen have done a pretty good job. There's a couple of different things there that come into play. One, I think that it's also important that people know that in the Idaho Constitution, Section 23, it states in there clearly that sportsmen shall be the preferred method of managing our wildlife. From our perspective, that's what we're trying to do with some simple regulation changes and liberal wolf trapping regulation. I feel like we can catch up to them and get a handle on them. As of winter before last, our wolves were still multiplying at 28% every year despite our efforts.
Wow.
The thing that I hear all the time is, not all the time, but bringing you guys up lately, it's, well, that what you're doing sounds like a bounty. What do you say to that?
Well, I guess that goes back to you had asked me to go over the nuts and bolts, and I never completed that. So,
okay, go ahead.
So the way the program works, you pay a $35 membership fee, and our memberships run the calendar year, just like your hunting and fishing license. So every membership expires on December 31st. You pay a $35 membership fee. That membership fee entitles you as a hunting or trapping member to reimbursement of a wolf if should you harvest one, as many as you can legally. Then when you harvest a wolf, you send us a copy of your Idaho Fish and Game check-in slip, which proves that it's a legal harvest. It also proves which unit that you were in, because that information's on there from the CO or whomever it is that checked the wolf in. And then you send us a copy of your expense receipts for whatever it was that you paid for that assisted you to get into the woods to harvest a wolf. So fuel is by far the largest expense, especially for our trappers. They have to run their trap lines every 72 hours. Wolves oftentimes won't make a pass back through their area for 3 to 5 weeks, yet they still have to be there every 72 hours to check their traps. So for myself, I get in my truck and I drive for an hour. I get on my snow machine. I ride for 2 hours. I get off and I snowshoe to the top of the ridge and I set my wolf gear out. And I have to do that every third day. So two things that come into play there. One, anybody that has a full-time job cannot successfully trap wolves, unfortunately.
Right.
That that makes it extremely difficult, which also adds to the expense.
Right.
But anyhow, so...
Are you saying you don't have a full-time job, Justin?
Oh, I've got about 5 full-time jobs. But helping manage wolves so that the rest of our wildlife can thrive is hugely important to me, just having grown up here and watched what's happened with our deer, elk, and moose populations. But so anyhow, you send us a copy of your fish and game check-in slip. You send us a copy of your receipts to be reimbursed for up to the max amount allotted for the time frame and the unit that you're in, and we write you a check. You keep the wolf. That's the process, and it's worked fairly well. To date, we've never missed a payment. That's been one of the things that we initially started out doing. Is we clearly denoted that reimbursements were only given out as funding was available. And thanks to the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation actually coming on as a huge sponsor, some of those financial concerns have diminished a little bit. Growth of the program, we've started having some fundraising banquets, which also create funding for us. We actually just had our largest banquet, the largest wildlife banquet ever held in Bonner or Boundary County here on February 10th at the Bonner County Fairgrounds. We sold out at over 600 people. and had to turn away over 200 more. And that was pretty substantial for us to have that many people from small town area of Sandpoint. It's obvious that the support is there for the program, and people realize that this is not a bounty. We are reimbursing people the money that they have already dished out to be able to try to save our wildlife and to balance our predator-prey ratios. We're just trying to make it possible for those guys to get the job done.
So where do you have local chapters now?
Well, not being similar to a lot of other wildlife organizations, so let's just say the Mule Deer Foundation or the Elk Foundation, for example, they establish different chapters, and each chapter has may have different projects that they'd like to work on. You know, a mm-hmm. chapter up here may be working on controlled burns, whereas a chapter down south may be working on plantings or juniper control or whatever it happens to be to improve habitat. Within the Foundation for Wildlife Management, we basically have one chapter. We've got just over 1,200 members, and the majority of the membership is within the state of Idaho, but we do have members from 26 different states. A lot of those are sportsmen who come here to hunt and fish and recreate and just want to be able to see deer, elk, and moose thriving in the wild. So basically, this is our only chapter at this point. I would like to start new fundraising chapters and start hosting banquets in different areas of the state. My long-term goal is to be able to hold 5 different banquets across the state of Idaho just to be able to fund Idaho. We would like to be able to increase our reimbursement amounts to the point to where the people who know how to harvest wolves from Canada and Alaska are willing to come here to do so and help us out with that. It's, using the reproduction rates as kind of a guideline, we feel that we need to remove 400 wolves per year from the state of Idaho to keep them from expanding. It's guesstimated at this point that we have documentation for, and don't quote me on this, I want to say around 800 to 1,000 wolves within the state, and wolves are breeding right now, and they'll be reproducing again. And one of the things that we've noticed, one area in particular, I'll just give you an example, one area in particular that I've been trapping, in the northern panhandle, we pulled 12 wolves out of there last year. Our membership did anyhow, and I was a part of that. And we thought that we had it down to one big mature female and one male pup. And we thought that we would have some relief in that area for a couple of years so that our elk there can rebound. And this spring, there were 2 different litters of pups located in there, and we started all over. It's just like we're farming wolves. We just can't seem to catch up and get ahead. Kind of lost my train of thought where I was headed with all that, but it's just, it's astounding what it takes to try to manage them. And so, our goal of 400 wolves per year across the state, hopefully, will be enough to keep them from expanding. At least at that point, the Fish and Game Department will be able to increase harvest in certain zones by helping sportsmen out, or decrease harvest in certain zones if they have concerns about, the wolf numbers and healthy population. That's another fact I think that is important to throw out there, is we're not anti-wolf. We're pro-moose. We're pro-elk. We're pro-deer. We're pro-balanced ecosystem. We have no interest in eradicating the wolves, but just like the rest of Idaho's wildlife, wolves must be managed. We've spent the last 130 years using the North American model of wildlife conservation to try to maximize our ungulate populations within the United States for both consumptive and recreational use. And if we allow wolves that have adapted to Canada, basically, there's a lot of different misconceptions and thoughts and ideas on how the wolves have changed, or whether this is the same wolf that was here prior or not. But regardless of any of that, if we allow the wolves that we have here today to wipe out all of those millions and millions of dollars and all of those the last 100 years of work of increasing and maximizing our populations, it's just such a huge shame. There's no reason for that. Wolves just need managed the same as the rest of our wildlife does.
I think that's a big thing too. Another thing to highlight is you're not anti-wolf.
We're not.
You believe what I believe. I'm not anti-wolf either. They're here. I think they're kind of here under false pretenses. That's my opinion. But I'm not anti-wolf. And now that they're here, I think we do need to manage with extreme prejudice.
That's, you know, and it's not just the elk or deer that are affected. Also, it's another aspect that people don't realize. Our mountain lions and our bears are also in trouble. The wolves, it's documented. Our wolves are digging bears up out of their dens and killing and eating them.
Wow.
You know, what does that do to our grizzly bear population? What effect does that have on them? What effect does this expansion of wolves have on the few remaining Selkirk caribou up here?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, those are huge factors to take into consideration. The latest study has actually provided data that states that mountain lions in a lot of Idaho are actually killing more elk than wolves are. And how they've come to that data is they've gone out and they've collared a series of elk in different various places. When that collar goes dead, it stops moving. They get a signal. They hike out there and they try to identify what it was that killed that elk. Well, what's happening is the mountain lions are taking down, you know, one critter a week is what they typically would maybe. So they kill a calf elk, let's say. Well, the wolves have learned to follow the lions around. They run the lion off the kill. There's a free meal for them. The lion's still hungry. He has to kill again. Well, by the time he makes another kill, the wolves are right on his tail and run him off of that one. A lion that used to kill one white-tailed deer a week now may have to kill 8 or 10 before he gets to eat anything. And so just the compounding factor of adding the numbers of wolves that we have now to the existing predators that we had here has just created a horrible situation out there. It's,
I haven't even thought about that.
Yeah, me neither. That's crazy. I mean,
that even makes this more important.
Yeah.
Well, it is. I mean, it really compounds on itself. And, you know, and to take it one step farther, you know, not to get off this topic of what we do, but houndsmen per se, there's areas of North Idaho now where there's one pack of wolves that I know has killed more than 16 hound dogs. And so therefore, those guys will no longer go in there. The houndsmen will not go there to hunt anymore. They won't turn their dogs loose because it's not safe. I work for an outfitter here locally, and I can tell you that one of his biggest concerns all through the winter trying to hunt mountain lions is the wolves. They turn the dogs out and the wolves start howling, and it's a foot race to the bottom of the canyon to try to get in between them so that the wolves don't kill their hound dogs. So what's happened to compound the issue is some of the areas that are extremely affected negatively, our ungulate populations are negatively affected by wolf predation. It's now also being negatively affected by mountain lions because of the pressure from the wolves on the mountain lions. And then also those cat numbers are not being dwindled because the lion hunters will no longer go to those zones to hunt. There's so many different factors of the wolf issue that compound on themselves and on each other. It really makes for a bad situation.
I imagine the farmers are also being negatively affected by the wolves coming in closer and, you know, taking their animals. I obviously don't know the numbers behind that or whatever, but I can only imagine that would be easy targets.
Well, I can tell you there's, it's also compounded in that respect as well. I just read a report from the Idaho Wolf Control Board back in January that was given, and they stated that predation by wolves on ranching community had actually essentially doubled this last year, which is pretty astounding.
Is it target cattle or is it target
cattle? Chicken? Cattle and sheep.
Sheep.
Sheep and cattle, I think, are the two most outspoken because that's a huge impact to their well-being, to their, you know, their economy, their financial stability for those people who make a living ranching. There's also a substantial amount of hound hunters that are losing their dogs. There's people here in North Idaho. I know of at least two examples in the past year where house dogs have been killed in people's yards by the wolves that have come through. Down south in particular, you know, you mentioned the ranching community. To go back to that topic, I guess, for a minute, another negative effect that's happened is you've got wolves in the backcountry now that have pushed elk out of the backcountry and down into agricultural farming ground. And elk in particular are real habitual. So the lead cow elk, if she doesn't leave the field and go back up into the timbered land and into the wilderness where she came from in the springtime, because there's wolf pressure up there, her offspring will not know to go back up the mountain. So what's happened over the past few years in southern Idaho, the ranchers down there are inundated with vast numbers of elk that they've never had around because those elk have all been pushed out of the backcountry where they have always lived and thrived by the wolf pressure. And so to compound that, then you have the Fish and Game Department. They're left trying to figure out how do we manage, this inundation of ungulates into all the farm ground and help the ranchers out. So then they're forced to give landowner tags and extremely liberal seasons. I know that there's one controlled hunt here in the Panhandle. I believe they hunted cow elk from August 1st to the end of December or something like that.
My friend's daughter just shot a cow last week down in southern Idaho because a lot of elk down low. There's a lot of elk where they shouldn't be.
Well, yeah. That's a huge expense with the elk damaging property, eating the crops. It's like things you don't even think about when you just start with down one rabbit hole, which is the wolves and the impact that they're making on so many different aspects, you know, and animals and people. That they're like, oh, well, they're not affecting me because they're just out in the boonies or what. Well, I think that you need to rethink it because it's more close to home than you think. I think for a lot of people that live in the city that think that they're not affected, or they don't know anybody that are affected by this problem.
It's pretty drastic. I can tell you, growing up here, until, I don't know, the past 5 years or so, I had never seen a moose in Sandpoint, Idaho. And I can tell you that we now have resident moose in Sandpoint, Idaho, because the wolves come off of Schweitzer and Baldy Mountain, and they have pushed those moose all the way down to up here on Pine Street and around the Dover city limits even. And those moose have learned that it's pretty easy living in town in comparison to living in the woods where they're being chased all the time.
I would be afraid to be a skier or snowboarder, honestly, up in Schweitzer, because you get off on a wrong trail, you could be bait for a whole pack. I mean, that sounds silly, I'm sure, to some people, but...
I spend a ton of time around them. I work as a hunting guide, and I spend a lot of time in the woods with wolves, and I've had them aggressively bark at me and challenge me and stuff, but I've never had one show aggression. I do know people who have, but I don't know. I'd try not to concern myself too much with that aspect of it. There are some people who legitimately have fears of wolves, for their own well-being. I would encourage anybody who's out walking their dogs in the mountains to be a little more aware and alert, and make sure that you have control of your dog, because a wolf will definitely take a pet. And it doesn't seem to bother them that you're there either. So,
right. Like mountain lions and priest are, they've become more aggressive, and that could be because of the wolves, with just people on the trails. And so I don't know.
I think it all compounds on, one thing on the other. I've had people insist that mountain lions are the reason that our elk populations are struggling in some areas. And my argument to that is that we've had healthy mountain lion populations my entire life, and we've never seen ungulates struggle like this. So yeah, maybe mountain lions are having an effect on them now, but it's because of the compounding factors of adding wolves to a system that was already established and healthy and thrived for, a vast number of years. And so again, not being anti-wolf, I'm certainly, I can tell you, I am blown away at the things that I've learned about wolves in the past 5 years pursuing them. I've been very successful in my entire hunting career. I grew up way off the grid in the mountains, and I've spent my whole life in the mountains, and wolves are by far the smartest, most difficult quarry I've ever pursued. They're an amazing animal, and I've got a ton of respect for them. It's incredible the things that I've seen them do. But unfortunately, they're also an amazing predator, and they have to be managed in order for the rest of our wildlife to be able to thrive.
Yeah,
I think it goes back to, and people don't like this being brought up, but they were poisoned out for a reason. It wasn't because they weren't taking animals. It was because they were competitive with the humans getting animals.
Yep.
So they were poisoned out for a reason, and people don't want to believe that. You throw an apex predator in the apex predator into a place where it hasn't been for 100 years and you don't expect that outcome, that's pretty naive on that person's thought process, in my opinion.
Absolutely. A lot of people don't understand how just how much of an apex predator a wolf is. It is not uncommon for a single wolf by itself to take down a mature bull elk. And I've had a lot of people, a lot of sportsmen even look at me sideways when I say that. And it's documented. They're an amazing predator. And another thing that people don't understand about wolves is how far and how fast they travel. It's absolutely incredible. I guide over in Unit 4 and 4A and over along the lake there. I can tell you that in one night's time, we'll cut a set of wolf tracks down by, let's say, Cedar Creek, down by the lake over there on the water. And in one night's time, that group of wolves will go all the way to the top of the mountain, drop over the backside, go all the way down into the valley by Clark Fork, hunt the length of the valley, climb back up Johnson Creek, go all the way back up over the top, drop down through Granite Creek, all the way back to the lake, and be back where they started before it's light again in the morning.
Jeez.
And people don't understand that. A lot of guys will call me and they say, gosh, can you help me find, can you give me a drainage to go hunt wolves in? And I chuckle to myself because I understand that they don't understand. It's so difficult to try to put yourself in the same drainage as a wolf because they travel so far so fast. You don't know if they're, within 5 miles or 20 miles of you. And that could change in a couple of hours. It's extremely drastic, the distances that they travel. And that's another reason why managing them is so difficult.
Another thing that's brought up all the time, and I wanted to get your thought on it. Do you think they kill for fun?
Oh, absolutely they do. That's documented and proven. It's a wild dog. Take a house dog out and that's never been around, let's say, livestock. Turn it loose in a cattle yard. What happens?
You know that to be true, Ryan.
I had a dog with that issue.
Yeah, I mean, if something runs, a dog is a natural predator, and wolves are the apex predator. If something runs, their instinct is to chase it. And it's not because they have the intention of killing it or they have the intention of eating it. It's because it's running. They're a predator. That's how they're wired. That's the reason why for so long, when we still had a lot of moose up Lightning Creek over here, that's why we were finding all those moose with their hamstrings tore off. The wolves chase them down and they chew them up. Well, when they fall down, they're not moving anymore. And it's the game has stopped. Exactly. The chase is over. And it's not their fault. I don't think any wolf has the mentality of, I'm going to go maim every critter that I see. It's instinct.
Well, they don't have morality. They don't think, this is wrong. I shouldn't do that.
What animal do you think is most affected by the wolf?
I struggle to not say humans. As a member of the hunting community, they've affected my life and my lifestyle in very substantial ways. That being said, I don't have to look over my shoulder 24/7 like our deer, elk, and moose do. I would say in North Idaho, sections of North Idaho, moose by far have taken the brunt of the damage, and moose unfortunately don't get the popularity of the elk. The elk is so heavily hunted and so well known by so many that there's a lot of focus on the elk, and yes, elk are the preferred food of a wolf, but in Unit 1, specifically in North Idaho, our moose have just been wiped out. Those big bulls, the big mature bulls would stay up in those big ceanothus brush fields, at 5,000 feet. And a lot of them won't move. I mean, they'll live there all winter long. They've got everything that they need, and they may have a 200 or 300 yard section of a ridgeline all trampled down, and that's where they spend the entire winter. Well, when the wolves come through and the snow's 10 feet deep and they've only got, three trails and it makes a loop in a 300-yard circle or whatever, they don't have a chance. They can't get away. And I can tell you, I had a moose tag, and that's actually where you and I met, was actually up moose hunting. And when I had my moose tag prior to that season, at any given time, I felt very confident in being able to find a 50-inch bull on a given weekend if I put some time and effort into it. And I ended up shooting a bull moose on the 40th day of my hunt. And in 40 days of hunting nonstop, and that's not exaggerating, 40 days with a camera crew, the majority of the time, we saw 78 total bulls. Of that, there were only 4 mature bulls.
I can agree with that. And so, because I hunted 42 days that year for a mature moose, and I saw one. And fast forward that to last year, I put up a number of trail cameras because I was trying to kill a mule deer in that area that I had on there. And going to, I think it was 2013 when we had those tags.
Yeah.
I documented 72 different bulls I saw, and that was on trail camera. Well, going this year, same place, same trail cameras, I had four total bulls.
Wow.
So in that 4-year span, went from, I think, 72 bulls that I had that I could say, you know, maybe there, we'll say 65 bulls for sure. One or two could have been the same bull.
Yeah.
Went to 4 total bulls in 3 months of trail cameras. So that has, there has to be something there.
Back up to your moose hunt, I think you saw 2 mature ones. The one that Aaron called you about and you had to run and puked. Well, and
I say 2 mature bulls, but the fact remains.
I had to say it because somebody's going to call you up and be like, wait a minute, I thought Aaron called you on the radio.
I only saw 1 mature
bull. That's true, yeah.
And this last 4. I mean, I didn't see the bulls because I had them on a trail. I was looking at trail camera and I wasn't hunting in that time frame, but trail cameras generally don't lie.
Right.
How can you go from 70 something to 4?
No, that is horrible. That during that same season, we documented all of the moose that we saw, and in that same 40 days, we saw 209 cows and only 14 calves. And of those 14 calves, I'm almost positive that it was the same set of twins that was seen at least 2 times, if not 3 times. And it just kind of goes to show, regardless of whether it's strictly the wolves or not, our moose up here are in trouble. And I really wish the department would shut down moose hunting in our area until we figure out what's going on exactly and how to help them.
Another thing that they jump onto is the problem you had with your bull and the meat that the wolf brings into the factor that people don't talk about.
That a lot of people don't talk about that, and the ones that do typically are extremely frustrated and upset about it, and so a lot of the conversations aren't necessarily educational. There's so much frustration involved with it, but the diseases that wolves carry, basically the wolves carry a tapeworm that when they defecate, the tapeworm larva stays alive in the feces. The larva dries out, critters walk through it. That larva is then dispersed onto the vegetation. Deer, elk, and moose eat that vegetation, and because of their digestive tracts are so different from that of a canine, the larva gets lost in their system, and so it doesn't end up in their digestive tract the way that it should. It ends up in their bloodstream. And my moose in particular, it was a decent mature bull, and it weighed less than a lot of spike elk that I've killed. And when we got it opened up, its entire carcass, including the muscle tissue, was completely riddled with all of these little larva eggs, tapeworm larva, basically. It actually, upon further research, it had 2 separate types of diseases that's carried by the wolves. But
wow.
Anyhow, it's just really unfortunate. We're seeing that happen more and more, not only in moose and elk. I think it started initially just in the moose, or the majority of the cases were in moose, and now I get reports of it in elk regularly, and even in whitetails, you know, the farm country up in Bonner's Ferry. I know a number of guys up there that are starting to see it in our deer populations also.
So they kill in 2 ways.
Yes. It just goes back to the compounding factors. I mean, it all stems from the vast number of wolves that we have, and it's just that much more important that we keep them managed.
Okay, so getting into the next question, that since I've been starting to post about what you got going on, how does a guy in Nebraska or Florida that wants to help out, he comes out west hunting, how does he help with this reimbursement program if he doesn't want to become a member? He knows he's never going to actually probably hunt wolves outside of maybe shooting one that he finds luckily while he's elk or deer hunting. How do they help?
Well, I guess that kind of goes back to the other part of the membership. You know, as a hunting or trapping member, it entitles you to the reimbursement. As a non-hunting or trapping member, this gives you a way to make a difference. This gives you a way to financially support those guys that are out there busting their butt getting the job done. You know, you can
donate, correct?
Absolutely. You can go to F4. WM.org. It stands for Foundation for Wildlife Management, but F4WM.org, and you can become a member there. You can donate there. We actually have a members-only section where if you're interested in learning about hunting and trapping wolves, we have information in there, educational things. We try to put on some educational seminars and different things. We have folks who are either professional or just very successful wolf hunters and trappers. Sometimes will do seminars and demos for us for our membership to be able to try to educate folks. That's something else people don't understand. Wolves learn so rapidly that when a guy goes out and he starts trying to trap wolves or hunt wolves or whatever, it's so easy to educate them that we try really hard to educate our trappers specifically before they get in the woods, because they can actually make it to where their pack is far more difficult to catch by making silly mistakes.
To the people that say that live out in Florida or back east that come out west hunting and say, I want to get involved, but I don't want to be a member because I may not have the opportunity to harvest wolf. That doesn't make sense to me, and maybe there's more that I'm not thinking of, but if you're coming out here hunting out west, you want those animals to be there that you're hunting, whether they be elk or deer. So you should be involved, because if the wolves are taking out that whole population or making a huge impact on it, there's nothing that you're going to be able to shoot once you get here. So to me, that doesn't make sense, and maybe they're thinking of the fact that because they don't live here, they can't harvest a wolf, and that's a waste of money to them. But you're putting in your money to make sure that other people are helping animals that you are hunting still be here when you get here. So
that's what we went through the last 40 minutes, kind of.
Yeah,
all that up.
Right. So I mean, and it's an opportunity to be involved and educate people around you in Florida or back east or wherever you're from about this issue, because just because you don't live here doesn't mean that it's not affecting things that you care about. People can have causes that they care about in Africa. Just because you don't live there doesn't mean it's not something that you may become interested in.
That's a very valid point, and it also extends so far beyond hunting. How many people come to North Idaho for priests to go camping at Priest Lake?
Yeah.
How many of them would love to see a deer or an elk or a moose while they're out tootling around the lake in their boat?
Oh my gosh, or Lake Coeur d'Alene. I mean, we have so many people that it's a destination spot now, and it's becoming so publicized for that. So, I mean, it's tourism. It's everything wrapped up in one tidy little package.
It's easy to support a big old elk or a big old mule deer. It's hard to start talking about killing wolves to people.
Right.
But the conversation needs to happen, or you won't be killing that big old sexy 6-point bull elk.
Right.
Absolutely. There's a lot of truth to that. And it, you know, my own driving passion. I mean, I have kids. I've got a son that's 15 years old, and I firmly believe he deserves the right to be able to experience elk camp the way I have, to be able to hear an elk bugle in mm-hmm. the woods. I mean, that's a profound moment in a person's life if they're an outdoorsman, to be able to experience things like that. Whether you hunt or not, managing wolves for the good of all our wildlife is critical, and this program provides a way for people to give back. There's so many people on social media and different things, you know, I hear all these different complaints, and everybody complains, but when you ask them to put their money where their mouth is and mm-hmm. sign up, oftentimes they shy away, and I have struggled to understand that. To me, it's such a huge importance, you know, such an important program to be a part of. In my opinion, every sportsman, every outdoorsman in Idaho, every rancher in Idaho should be a member of F4WM.
What is the membership cost?
$35.
A year?
$35 a year, yes.
I don't want to laugh, but it's funny to me. If anybody says they can't afford that, you've got to really be in dire straits, because that's like one meal at McDonald's for a family.
Yeah.
And I'm not even exaggerating.
Get coffee for you.
It's... Shut up. Or you can just donate $5.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, I mean, you don't have to be a member to just donate.
We have a lot of people, you know, I'll attend different trade shows and different things, and we have a little booth, and I try really hard to educate folks on the problem and on what people can do, and oftentimes people will say, well, I don't want to be on a mailing list, but here's $20 or here's $100 mm-hmm. or, you know, whatever they have to offer. There's a lot of folks that are in that boat, and we're excited to have that support.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you want to go bigger than that, and you want to help expand with these banquets, and you want to, you know, help put on a banquet, how does one go about doing that?
give me a call. You can at our website, f4wm.org, if you send us an email on there, you can get in touch with me. My phone information's on there as well. And just give me a shout. That's one of the things that I have a goal of, is trying to expand the program and being able to start new chapters in different areas. We actually have some folks in Lewiston right now that are working on potentially doing that. We've had people in McCall, Salmon and Chalice areas. We've had different people that have wanted to be involved and give me a shout. I'd love to go to a new area and host a banquet or a membership drive or whatever it takes to get people involved. It amazes me how, even right here at home, still to this day after doing this since 2012, how many people say, what are you talking about? What are you doing? And they just don't know that we exist. And trying to get the information out to the right people that's not going to cause conflict is definitely been something that I haven't been real good at. And I'm trying to improve on that now.
Well, you have 5 jobs.
Yeah, that's all. Just 5.
So how, bigger picture, Montana and Wyoming need this help too. What's the big picture? How do we get into Montana? How do you get into Wyoming?
Well, so I can tell you this: we've been striving to expand into Montana for the past 3 years. And 2 weeks ago, we actually were notified by Ken McDonald, who's the head of wildlife for the Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, that they, although they do believe that our program is a bounty per se, which it is not, they could not support our program, but they did state that they would not oppose it. So we've been kind of working on that for quite some time. We actually already filed with Secretary of State for Montana. We have a license to do business within Montana. The big push there was we don't want to do anything that's going to be in opposition of the game department for the state. And so we've been kind of working with them to come to a conclusion as to whether they were not okay with us operating within the state of Montana. And Ken actually just sent us an email here a couple of days ago that shows some Montana state law that has to do with prizes and different things in relation to harvest, that his concern is that it may or may not be legal the way things are worded. So there's some a lot of politics and research to be done there as far as being able to operate within Montana. I think Wyoming is certainly an option. My own personal goal, honestly, I would like to establish five different chapters within the state of Idaho before we look hard at going into a different state. We want to make sure that we're effective where we've started out. That being said, just reach out to me. I'd love to visit with anybody who's interested in having the program come to their area. Anywhere that there's a legal ability to manage wolves, I think that the program definitely has a benefit.
So in order to do a banquet, Justin's needing, venues, caterers, like there's so many different facets to putting a good or just a banquet together. So if you know of people or think that you have a good fit, reach out to Justin and let him know, because if we don't live in these communities, like we don't in all of them in Idaho, we don't know, local people that have a real handle on these things. So it's like anything that you think you could do or any questions you have, definitely don't be shy in reaching out.
Yeah, and all the people on Rockslide, every time we bring up a wolf debate, it's heated. Take that passion into actually doing something that promotes a positive outcome instead of just arguing about it. Put your money where your mouth is. Get a hold of Justin. Let's figure this out.
Or even just time. Even if you don't have money that you feel like you can donate, time is sometimes more valuable than money because, a lot of people won't contribute their time. They don't have it, or they don't feel like they know enough, or I don't know the reasoning.
Absolutely. I that's one of the things that I'll share again. We just sold out a banquet at over 600 people, and the only reason we had to claim it was sold out and tell everybody it was sold out was because we don't have the space. The only venue in Bonner County to host that many people is our fairgrounds building here, and it was substantially packed in there at 600 people, and we had to turn away about 200 people.
That's sad.
The only way that I know to make it to where everybody can attend is to start having a banquet elsewhere. You know, at this banquet, we had people come from all over the state. We actually had Lieutenant Governor Brad Little here. We had a number of different state senators and state representatives. We had a large number of people from other areas come here. And I get phone calls from folks, you know, down in Lewiston area per se that say, oh my gosh, I really wanted to come to the banquet, but it's just so far and the weather's bad and I can't make it. And my answer to that is give me a call. I would love to establish a venue, pick a date, find a caterer, and get a half a dozen or a dozen volunteers to help me. And we'll put a banquet together where you are. Help me help you make a difference.
Right. And so where will you be next? Justin, where is the next banquet happening?
Well, I know that for sure that we have a banquet here. Our next year's banquet here in Sandpoint is February 9th. And I'm sure that it will be sold out as well. I would like to establish more events between now and then, but I don't have any on the books yet.
Okay. Well, I can give you my word. Me and Tanya are going to try to get something going in Coeur d'Alene. We're going to try to start because it's something I believe in. The places I've hunted my whole life are definitely affected by the wolf, and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is.
Excellent. I appreciate it. I appreciate the support, and I really appreciate you guys having me on today.
No problem.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for your time.
One more time, where do they find you?
F4WM.org. F the number 4WM.org.
All of these links will be on our website under the podcast.
He has a Facebook page, and you also have an Instagram page you just started, and that's called Wolf Management, correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. I looked at it before I came in here.
We'll put that up there, too.
Yeah. We appreciate it, Justin. Thanks for coming.
Absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks for listening. And as always, check us out at AveryAdventures.com and on YouTube at Avery Adventures. Thanks.